I'll give you this, Joanna Whitman. Your life certainly hasn't been boring. Rafferty. Joanna picked up her flip-flops. I'm changing my name back to Rafferty. I'm tired of linking my life with Cliff's. I'm tired of talking about Cliff. Tell me about Eden. She seems great. You must be very proud. Worried and anxious, mostly. I guess that's being a parent. Remembering the miscarriage, Mel shook her head. I'm sorry, don't be. And I'm sure being a parent is very anxiety-inducing. I'm worried about Ashley, and she isn't even mine. What's your biggest worry? Mel hesitated. Oh, you don't want to hear about this. I do. I want to know everything. And that was friendship, wasn't it? Listening, when listening was hard. Being there, when it might have been more comfortable to walk away. Sometimes I feel as if she does the opposite of what I want her to do. To make a point? Joanna slid the bag over her shoulder, and they walked up the steps to Otter's Nest. Yes, as if she's throwing down a challenge. At the moment, she doesn't want to go to college. She wants to stay home and hang out on the beach because life is short and surfing is her dream and we should all live our dreams, which I wouldn't, yada yada. And you have a problem with that? Yes, a big problem. Mel stopped. Or maybe I don't. It's more that I'm worried she hasn't thought it through, that it isn't what she really wants at all, but she's just choosing that path to flex her independence. You mean she wants to do the opposite of what you want her to do? Well, feels that way. I'm worried she's going to make bad choices, do something she'll regret. Well, what if she does? Isn't that life? A bad choice often doesn't seem bad at the time, and I speak from experience. Mel tried to imagine how she'd feel if Eden did what Joanna had done. But that wouldn't happen, because Joanna had no support at home, but Eden knew she was loved and supported, didn't she? She felt a moment of panic. What if she didn't know? What if she felt she couldn't talk to her mother? So what would you tell your younger self? Joanna thought about it. Relax. Forgive yourself when you make mistakes. Understand that decisions aren't always simple and the best path isn't always clear. Know that it's never too late to switch direction. That the most important thing in life is having people who love you. That grilled cheese is more satisfying than a poached quail's egg served with foam. Be kind to yourself, even when other people are cruel. Remember that you made the choices you made for a reason, even if that reason isn't clear anymore. She stopped, realizing that Mel was staring. Wow. Joanna shrugged. I guess I've had a lot of practice at making bad choices. But you came home, Mel said, and that was a good choice. Yes, and you picked me as a friend when you were 4 years old, so that was a good choice too. True. They walked across the terrace, showered off the sand and salt, then wrapped themselves in towels and walked into the kitchen. Joanna filled two glasses with ice and topped them up with lemonade from the fridge. Mel was still thinking about Eden. What did you need when you were Eden's age? What would have helped? You mean from an adult? Joanna handed her a glass of lemonade. I'm not a parent, so I'm no expert. But I think the best thing you can do is listen. Listen to what she wants. I'm scared that if she doesn't go to college, she'll regret it. And if that happens, then she can go to college later. Mel took a sip of lemonade, and then put the glass down. This is delicious. I made it. Joanna felt a flash of pride. Cookies, lemonade, and so far, you're still alive. It's a miracle. But the real miracle is spending time with you again. Mel put her glass down and hugged her old friend, feeling the warmth of a lifetime flow through her. It's so, so good to have you back, Joanna Rafferty. Joanna hugged her back. It's good to be back. Chapter 21. Joanna.
Right, I'm off. Ashley walked onto the terrace and whistled when she saw the table with the flickering candles and the gleam of silverware. That's romantic. Joanna panicked. Is it too much? No, it's perfect. Ashley straightened a napkin. Don't forget to toast those pine nuts and add them warm to the salad at the last minute. Got it. And remove dessert from the fridge 30 minutes before you eat it. I know. I've made a list and set alarms on my phone. Anything else? Remember to have fun? Joanna hugged her. You too. Although pizza, ice cream, and a movie are a pretty unbeatable combination. What movie are you watching? Something with zombies where everyone dies a grisly death. Eden's choice. I'm going to cover the baby's eyes and use subtitles so it doesn't hear screaming. I won't be home tonight, by the way, Ashley said it casually. I'm staying over at Eden's. That way no one has to drive me, and everyone can have a drink while I nurse my sparkling water. Are you sure? I don't mind coming to get you. I'm hoping you will have your mind on other things. Ashley wagged her eyebrows. Also, Eden and I are going to eat pancakes at the Surf Cafe for breakfast, so don't feel you have to rush to get dressed in the morning. What exactly are you implying? That if you and Nate want to have sex in every room in the house, you don't need to worry you'll find me in any of them. You'll have the place to yourself. Ashley! Joanna felt her color rise. We won't be having sex. Oh, that's disappointing. Why not? Was she serious? For a start, because we barely know each other. Okay, I'm going to give you the benefit of my considerable life experience in these matters. Three things. First, number one. Ashley held up a finger. You've known him your whole life, and you've already had plenty of sex with him. Just because you've had a gap doesn't mean you don't know him. Two, sex is a really good way of getting to know someone. I hardly dare ask about number three. Number three is that sex doesn't have to be serious. It doesn't have to come with a bucket load of emotions. It can be fun. A hookup. A hookup. Ashley shook her head. Stop taking life so seriously. Live in the moment. When did you last have really good sex? Joanna stared at her. Ha! Ashley pointed a finger. That's what I mean. You can't remember. Maybe I can. Maybe I just don't want to talk about it. Nate, she thought. Nate was the last time she'd had really good sex. When love, at least, had seemed simple and uncomplicated. Not that her sex life with Cliff had been bad exactly. At least not at the beginning, but romance, excitement, intimacy had all been missing from her life for a long time. Ashley nodded. Give yourself a gift, Joanna. Enjoy yourself. I'm twice your age. How come you're the one who is so sure about everything? I'm not. I'm still a teenager, with all the associated insecurities. I'm always comparing myself to other people. I think I'm not clever enough, or funny enough, or thin enough. Do people even like me? Do I even like myself? Most days, I feel as if someone threw my emotions into a blender. I'm not sure of anything at all, except that it's okay for sex to be fun. But you, Joanna, Ashley smiled, you are serene and dignified in the most trying of situations. You've never thrown a rotten egg at a reporter or sworn at a photographer. Yet, you are always in control, and she shrugged and waved a hand toward Joanna. Look at you. You're gorgeous. Your skin, your hair, I mean, talk about serious hair goals. Basically, Joanna, you are the boss. I'm the boss? You are. Every morning when I look in the mirror, I tell myself, be more Joanna. Ashley hugged her. I'm going now. And whatever happens, I hope you have fun. Fun. Caution had been her priority for a long time. But maybe she needed to throw that away, along with all the other elements of her life that were linked with Cliff. She gave Ashley a ride to Mel's house and was back at Otter's Nest in plenty of time to shower and change. She told herself she wasn't nervous, but she changed her dress three times. She blamed Ashley for persuading her to buy new clothes and extend her color scheme. Now she had a choice, and she was struggling with it. Why hadn't she asked Ashley's advice? On the other hand, it was a bit sad that a woman of 40 didn't have the confidence to pick something to wear. Pull yourself together, Joanna. She glanced at the clothes again. Definitely not the blue. It was too showy for a casual supper on the terrace with a friend. Friend? Ex-lover? She stared at the clothes and in the end selected a white sundress that looked cool, summery, and appropriate for the weather. She was sliding a pair of silver hoops into her ears when the buzzer sounded. She pressed the button to open the gates and walked to the front door, her dress feeling light and cool against her bare legs. It was just dinner. She opened the door and felt her heart jump in her chest, not just because of the smile or the way he was looking at her, but because he was holding flowers. She hadn't expected him to bring flowers, and not any flowers. Seaside daisies, her favorite. Her knees shook a little. She lifted her gaze to his face.
You didn't have to. My mother would have something to say to me if I didn't take flowers and wine when I'd been invited to dinner.
He was implying the gesture was good manners. If he'd brought roses or tulips, maybe. But seaside daisies, these daisies had meaning, and he knew it. By bringing them, he tugged the past and the present closer together. She took the bunch, buried her face in them, and felt her heart ache a little at all the memories that came with them. My father grew these.
I remember. They reminded him of you, because they have to be protected from hot afternoon sun.
She had her mother's coloring, her real mother, with fair skin that burned easily. She wore hats with wide brims and was generous with sunscreen, but still she had to be careful. Nate knew that, too. Daisies.
Thank you.
Come in. I'll put these in water. She took them through to the kitchen and found a vase. Being practical helped steady her. He followed her and glanced around the kitchen.
This is a fantastic room.
He gazed across the terrace to the sea.
I remember when your kitchen was at the back of the house, with a small window looking under trees.
She filled the vase with water. It seemed a waste of the view.
Yeah.
He strolled from the kitchen to the terrace, and his gaze lingered on the table.
It looks great.
She put the daisies in water and carried them to the table. I thought the first time I cooked a proper dinner for someone, it should be an occasion. His gaze slid to hers.
I'm the first person you've cooked dinner for?
If you don't count Ashley, then yes. But if you're nervous and you want to leave, I'll understand.
I don't want to leave. But I confess I'm intrigued. You were married to a top chef for 2 decades. What does Ashley have that Cliff didn't?
Patience, Joanna said, and a generosity of spirit that Cliff lacked. Cliff hated anyone else being in the kitchen, so he couldn't see the point of teaching me to cook, particularly when I had no aptitude.
Nate shook his head. But he had a TV series teaching people how to cook.
That was all about him. He was the star. He was doing the cooking.
Whatever people then did in the privacy of their own homes wasn't his problem.
Nate laughed and glanced back at Otter's Nest.
I can't believe what you've done with this place. You remember when we used to get splinters just from sitting on the deck?
Oh, yes. He turned, a gleam in his eyes.
Can I look around? Is that rude?
Go ahead. I'll pour us a drink. Wine or beer? She thought of Ashley. Have fun. Or I have champagne.
Champagne sounds good.
His gaze held hers for a few seconds longer than necessary.
But give me the tour first.
Sure. We'll start upstairs and work our way down. She carried her phone with her because she didn't want to miss any of the reminders she'd set as part of her dinner planning. She was determined that the food was going to be perfect, and she, Joanna, would have cooked it. She pushed open doors, gestured to glass, soaring ceilings, bookshelves, cozy reading nooks.
I can tell you had a hand in design.
He wandered into the guest suite that Ashley was using.
Is there a room in the house without a dedicated reading corner?
No. She hadn't bothered with shoes, and the floor was cool against her bare feet. It was only when she entered her bedroom at the far end of the house that she remembered she hadn't made the bed. The sheets were rumpled, evidence of a restless night, punctuated by vivid dreams. Nate had played a leading role in those dreams. She felt her cheeks warm. The tour of her house had somehow become personal, revealing. We should go downstairs. Open that champagne. She turned to leave and slammed up against him because he'd been standing right behind her. There was a moment of exquisite tension, and then they were kissing, her mouth on his on hers. She felt his fingers in her hair, tracing her jaw, holding her head, as if he didn't know which part of her to touch first. And then his arms came around her and he pulled her in. His body was hard against hers, familiar and yet unfamiliar. She clutched his shoulders, then wrapped her arms around his neck, needing to get closer, closer. The thud of her heart against her ribs was almost painful. There was an ache low in her pelvis. She felt his hands slide her sundress from her shoulders, and she tore at his shirt, as impatient as he was. Had she ever felt this way before? Been this desperate? If she had, she couldn't remember. With him, maybe. But years and experience had sharpened the excitement. Or maybe it was just that now she knew. She could have waited, taken her time, protected herself and her heart. The old version of herself would have done that. But right now, right here in her bedroom, with the sound of the surf in her ears and the sea breeze cooling her skin, she was the new version, different. Or maybe it was just that her emotions had been locked away and controlled for so long that they'd been waiting for a moment like this to make their escape. She didn't know about the future, and she didn't need to know. All that mattered was now, and right now, he was all that she wanted. He was everything. The bed was a few short steps away, but they never made it that far because her foot tangled with his and she lost her balance, and, in trying to save her, he lost his balance too. They tumbled to the floor and he broke her fall, smacking his head and his elbow in the process. She gasped, "Are you? I'm okay. I'm fine." His mouth was back on hers and he kissed her fiercely, desperately, which suited her fine because it mirrored the way she was feeling. She heard a noise in the distance, a faint buzzing, but she ignored it until he lifted his head. "Maybe I'm not fine. I hear buzzing. I hear it too." And then she remembered. "It's my phone. It's my reminder to toast the pine nuts." His mouth was a breath away from hers, his gaze unfocused. Toast the pine nuts. Never mind. Neither of them could hold the thought for long enough to follow through, and she pulled him back to her, feeling the heavy weight of him pressing her into the floor, the slide of his hand between her legs. She felt hot, so hot, and she lifted herself against him as they made love with frantic, urgent, furious haste until the whole world exploded and she clung to him and he clung to her, both of them panting for air as they came back down to earth. They lay there, breathless, locked together, and then the alarm went again. Nate lifted his head. "You obviously had a desperate need to toast pine nuts." She started to giggle. She was lying here naked with Nate on a hard, uncomfortable floor like teenagers, and they were talking about pine nuts. "That's not the pine nuts. That moment has passed." She slid her hand over his bare chest. "This is the reminder to turn the heat up under the Mediterranean chicken." He raised himself on his elbow, studying her face. "You've set alarms for every stage?" "Yes. I was determined to get it right and produce a perfect meal. I wanted to impress you. Oh, now it's all messed up." "I'm already impressed." He reached out and stroked her hair away from her face. "I haven't had sex on the floor since I was 17, and that was with you." "Was it more comfortable back then? I can't remember." "Probably not, but we didn't have a massive bed as an option." He pulled her closer. "You're beautiful, Joe. So beautiful." "So are you. We should make the most of it, because tomorrow we're both going to be covered in bruises." He winced. "That could be true. Do you want to take an icy shower?" She laughed. "No. Do you?" "No, but we could swim in the sea. That would have the same effect." "That requires standing up, finding a swimsuit, putting it on, and walking to the beach, and I don't have that in me. He kissed her and then stood up and scooped her up.
Nate, what are you doing?
We're going for a swim.
Naked?
Why not? We're the only ones here, and the beach is secluded.
By the time she thought of reasons to argue, he was on the terrace and heading down the steps to the beach.
Are you seriously going to throw me into cold water?
We're going in together.
He strode into the waves, and she gasped as the freezing spray hit her bare skin.
Nate, this is fantastic.
Grinning, he dropped her into the water, and she clung to him as they both went under, the ocean muffling sound. When she finally surfaced, he was right next to her.
Remember when we used to swim here?
He pulled her against him, and she wrapped her arms and legs around him. His eyes were smoky blue, his lashes clumped together, and droplets of water clung to his jaw. She'd never seen a sexier man in her whole life.
I remember.
She kissed him, unable to keep her mouth away from his for more than a few minutes at a time.
But we never did it naked.
Oh, we must have been boring back then.
He smoothed her wet hair away from her face, and then they were kissing again, and kissing led to other things, and she stopped thinking, her senses swamped. All she could do was feel the intimate stroke of his fingers, the warmth of his mouth, the hard heat of him, the sea ice cold, the smoothness of her skin against the roughness of his. The contrasts were dizzying. She clung to his shoulders, digging fingers into hard muscle. Sound was muffled, soft gasps, the call of a gull, the rush of the ocean as it hit the sand. Afterward, he carried her to the beach, set her down on the sand, and kissed her again.
I missed you, Joanna.
It was a simple declaration, but it slid inside her and warmed her body from head to toe.
I missed you, too.
He grinned. I'm starving. All that sex and swimming. Is the food ruined?
No, but I haven't done any of my preparations because I ignored all the alarms.
No worries. We'll do it together.
They headed back to the house, showered, and retrieved their clothes, and then made their way to the kitchen.
Pine nuts.
She grabbed them and sprinkled them in the pan.
Starter is a salad. Citrus salad with toasted seeds and pine nuts.
Why don't you open the champagne? She was conscious of him standing close to her, but she focused on the pan, kept the heat low, as Ashley had taught her, gave the pan a shake halfway through. She checked the list she'd made. Pine nuts, check. Next was plate up the salad and turn the heat on under the casserole she'd made earlier. She walked to the fridge and retrieved the oranges she'd sliced earlier and the watercress. She arranged both on the plates and then added the warm pine nuts and dressed it. She switched on the heat under the casserole, making sure it wasn't too high.
Voila!
She handed him a plate, and he handed her a glass of champagne.
To friendship, long but no longer lost.
She tapped her glass lightly against his, and they carried their plates to the table.
This place is stunning.
He glanced back at the house.
You used an architect from L.A.?
San Francisco. He understood my vision for the place. I wanted to make the most of all that was good about it. The old beach house didn't make the most of the view.
I remember. I wondered if you'd sell the place.
I thought about it.
But then I thought Grandfather Rafferty might come back to haunt me if I gave away the land he'd worked so hard to get. He grinned.
Good call. He was one scary guy, according to my grandmother.
He picked up his glass and drank.
I think he'd approve.
Probably not. My father always said he had no interest in the house, only the land, the views, the ocean, the garden. Those are the things he loved.
That's why I didn't feel guilty knocking the original beach house down and starting again.
I think my father would have approved, though.
Oh, I'm sure he would.
Nate ate his salad.
He'd be glad to see you back here, that's for sure.
What about you? You took over the family business. You weren't going to do that. You had so many plans.
It was one of the things he'd said to her when he'd ended their relationship.
I want more than this, Joanna, more than Silver Point. He put his fork down. I grew up seeing how hard my parents worked in that place, how much they sacrificed. I didn't want that. I didn't want to spend my life serving food and drink to people I didn't know. It seemed like a small life to me when there was a whole world out there. I wanted a piece of that. Joanna listened and waited. This wasn't the end of the story. It couldn't be, because here he was, running the surf cafe. He glanced at her. You haven't changed, have you?
What do you mean?
Anyone else would have been hammering me with questions about now. She frowned.
I assumed you'd tell me what you wanted me to know. I believe in respecting a person's privacy. People aren't public property. They shouldn't have to reveal everything.
Right. His gaze held hers for a long moment. Yeah, it must have been so hard for you, being married to Cliff, all that attention.
I handled it. We were talking about you.
Yes, sorry.
He pushed his empty plate away.
You make plans when you're a teenager. That's what people do. But no one tells you that sometimes things just happen that are outside your control, that some decisions can be hard and sometimes plans need to change.
His gaze met hers.
I'm not going to pretend it doesn't unsettle me talking about this with you. It's as if time has jumped backward.
She reached across the table and took his hand. What happened, Nate?
My dad had a heart attack.
She felt a thud of shock, quickly followed by compassion. I'm sorry. I didn't know. Mel didn't.
She didn't tell you? Well, she was probably trying to be sensitive, worried that it might be all too raw, given what happened to your dad.
Well, it hurts. It will always hurt. But you find a way to live alongside it. But we were talking about your dad.
His heart stopped. SCA, sudden cardiac arrest, while he was helping the athletics team at the school. He'd complained of feeling breathless earlier in the day, but otherwise, there was no warning. He dropped right there on the track, but fortunately, they had a defibrillator and they used it.
Joanna could smell the chicken. It was ready to serve. The heat needed to be turned off now. But listening to Nate was more important than producing a perfect meal. He survived?
Yes. It was Greg who saved him. Greg who was standing next to him when it happened. He said my father was chatting away one minute, and the next he was on the floor with no pulse, not breathing. He grabbed the AED.
The defibrillator?
Yes, and used it. Had to shock him twice. But he got him back. That doesn't always happen. We were lucky. Lucky Dad collapsed right there, where there was help to be had. Lucky that Greg was, well, is, so calm and steady.
How awful for you, and for your mom and Mel. She kept hold of his hand, tight hold.
He was in the hospital for a while, and when he came home, he was focused on eating well and exercising, doing all the things the hospital had told him to do. Reduced stress was one of them. No more long hours in the cafe. Mom couldn't handle the extra load, and anyway, she wanted to care for him. I was working as a surf instructor in Europe. It was a way to travel and earn money. I came back.
Of course you did. That's what family does. She felt a pang, because she had no family who would drop everything for her, and no one who needed her to drop everything for them. Ashley, she thought. She'd drop everything for Ashley. And she had a feeling Ashley would drop everything for her.
Did your stepmother ever get in touch?
He'd obviously read her thoughts.
When things started going wrong with Cliff, when the press were hounding you.
No, why would she?
His mouth tightened. Some might say it was because you were family.
Not all families are like yours, Nate. She thought of him, getting that phone call about his father, flying across the country to get home, then staying home. Family loyalty. Love. She didn't feel any responsibility for me. She thought I wasn't her business, and maybe she was right about that.
She wasn't right about that. When you marry someone, you marry everything about them, their likes, their dislikes, their present, their past, their family, all of it. She didn't see it that way. And if he had lived, he would have divorced her. She knew that. And she was angry that my father left this place to me.
Your father was a wise man, although...
He stopped and she glanced at him. You were going to say that if he'd been that wise, he wouldn't have married her. Now, you're not wrong. But when it comes to relationships, we're not always wise, are we?
Her father must have felt that marrying Denise was the right decision at the time, even if later he'd regretted it. She, of all people, could understand that relationship decisions were influenced by a number of factors, that those decisions weren't always straightforward.
No, Nate spoke quietly. We're not always wise. That's because decisions aren't always clear. I hated the way she treated you, spoke to you. After your father died, you were hurting badly. She should have been your main source of comfort, but instead she made everything hurt more. She rejected you when you needed support. And you were the one who was there for me. You and Mel and your parents, who were always so kind and generous. I preferred being in your home than mine. I slid into your world because I didn't much like my own. And she could see now how that feeling had developed and grown as the years passed. You and your family were my whole world, and when our friendship shifted to something more, you became my whole world. You were everything. She saw it so clearly now. And I scared you. I'm sorry for it, Nate, for the way I was back then, for the way I shared all my problems with you. Are you kidding? I loved that you were so open and honest with me, that you felt you could tell me anything and everything. It made me feel special. It was what made us special. We shared without either of us holding back. And what's intimacy if it isn't that? He ran his hand over the back of his neck. I'm the one who should apologize to you. For what? For not being able to handle all the issues I was carrying? For not loving me enough? Neither of those things is a crime.
I loved you enough. He let his hand drop. I loved you, but I was scared. You trusted me with yourself, and I was afraid I'd let you down. You'd had so much hurt in your life, and I was scared of the responsibility, afraid that I couldn't be what you wanted and needed me to be. I suppose I was a bit in awe of what we had. Maybe I knew it was rare. I was afraid of ruining everything. And in the end, that's exactly what I did.
We were both young. A relationship shouldn't come with so much baggage at the start. I don't blame you at all for ending it.
I blame myself for handling it badly, for being insensitive.
She shook her head. You were direct and honest, the way you were right the way through our relationship.
She paused, thinking of Cliff.
It took me a few years to appreciate how brave you were, how tough it must have been for you.
A few years of living with a man who lied to me because that was easier, who dodged any and all conflict, who didn't respect me or himself, taught me that.
Joe, he paused and turned his head, sniffed.
Do I smell burning?
The chicken!
She shot to her feet, and he gathered up plates and followed. I take full responsibility. I kept you busy through all the reminder alerts.
She turned off the heat, gingerly checked the casserole. If I tell Ashley I burned it, I will never hear the last of it.
So don't tell her. He peered over her shoulder. Looks delicious.
She poked it with a spoon. The bottom is stuck to the pan, but we won't eat the bottom part.
He grabbed the plates and served two portions.
The pan is ruined. I'll buy you a new one.
He carried their plates back to the terrace, and this time they sat next to each other instead of facing each other. Her thigh brushed against his.
He had that same easy way about him that had always drawn her. Being with him was relaxing, except that right now she didn't feel relaxed. Her pulse was fast. She was acutely aware of him so close to her.
This is the first time I've cooked anyone dinner.
I have never enjoyed a dinner more.
She smiled, because she knew he wasn't talking about the food.
I was supposed to remove the dessert from the fridge 30 minutes before we ate it.
Go and do it now, he said, because I have a good idea of how we can spend the next 30 minutes.
Chapter 22. Mel. Mel served pancakes to the couple at the front of the deck. Her head ached. Ashley had spent the night on the spare bed in Eden's room, and the two girls had giggled and talked all night. Mel had grumbled to Greg, who had reminded her that she and Joanna had done the same. So she'd stopped grumbling, because it was true that they had, and also true that it had been an important part of their lives and their friendship. That intimate exchange of thoughts, those confidences shared in the darkness. It was all part of figuring out life, wasn't it? And one of the best parts of friendship. And if the price was Mel's headache, then it was probably worth paying. The day before, she'd loaned Eden her car again, and the two girls had driven up the coast to Carmel. They'd returned with overstuffed bags and smiling faces, so Mel assumed the trip had been a success. Now they were seated at a table in the shade, heads together, still talking as if they had too much to say and no time to say it. Nate appeared with a tray loaded with coffee. She watched as he served a group of women with a smile and a few friendly words, and then followed him back into the cafe. I'm not going to ask you how your evening was, because I know you won't tell me, but judging from the fact you were late to work, and you're never late to work, and the fact that you've been smiling constantly, even when that woman complained that her pain au chocolat was dark chocolate, not milk, I'm guessing you had a good evening.
I had a good evening. He grabbed two plates and started making up shrimp salad. And thanks for stepping in this morning.
Of course. I was awake anyway.
You? He glanced at her. You're never awake early.
I am when I don't go to sleep, which is what happened last night. Eden and Ashley were whispering half the night. I'm still trying to figure out whether a muffled giggle actually penetrates the walls more effectively than a normal one.
Nate smiled. They seem to be enjoying themselves when I saw them a moment ago.
Pancakes do that to a person.
She watched her brother assemble the perfect salad.
You're happy, and I'm pleased.
So I'm forgiven?
I was more angry with myself than you. Through the open doors, she saw Ashley stand up, give Eden a quick wave, and then walk lightly across the deck and down the steps. Presumably, Joanna had arrived, which meant that Eden would be heading home and then to the surf school. Later, she was meeting up with friends in town, so it was now or never. Nate, she turned to her brother, will you cover me for 10 minutes? There's something I need to do.
After you did the same for me this morning, I can hardly say no, can I?
He picked up the salads and piled them on a tray along with crusty bread warm from the oven and a jug of iced water.
You're not interrogating Joanna, are you?
No.
She paused. I want to talk to Eden. He met her gaze and nodded. Go for it.
She flashed him a grateful smile and headed back onto the deck in time to see Eden taking the steps to the beach.
Eden? Wait.
Eden turned, ponytail swinging.
What?
Mel felt suddenly nervous. Nervous around her own child.
Do you want to walk on the beach with me?
When?
Eden frowned. You mean right now?
Yes, now.
I thought we could talk.
Eden's gaze was shuttered.
You mean you want to lecture me on all the reasons I should go to college?
No, not that. But she couldn't blame Eden for thinking that, could she? She took a deep breath.
If you decide you don't want to go to college, then that's fine with me. Us, your dad and me.
We both know it's not fine with you, Mom. Don't lie. It's true that I'll worry, but I'll worry whatever you do. It's part of being a parent. I want what you want, Eden. And most of all, I want you to be happy. That's all. And only you know what that's going to take.
Eden stared. Have you been drinking?
No, of course not. Can we walk on the beach? I don't really want to have this conversation in full view of everyone. I don't... You said I didn't listen. I want to listen to you. I want to do it now. Eden didn't move. I didn't say it to upset you. I know that. And I'm not going to pretend it didn't upset me, because of course it did. She managed a weak smile. Despite what you may think, I'm trying to be the perfect mother here, and you providing plenty of evidence to the contrary didn't make me feel good. But I did listen, Eden. And you were right, that I always try and control and fix things. Eden sighed. I probably shouldn't have said it. I was out of line. No, you weren't. You were honest, and that's good. It didn't feel good, but it was good. I do try and control and fix things, and the fact that I do it because I love you doesn't change the facts. It's just scary being a mom sometimes, that's all. I want the best for you. I want your life to be perfect. I don't want you ever to be unhappy. But that's ridiculous, because of course no one's life is perfect, and no one can be happy all the time. Mom, can we walk just for 5 minutes? Eden took a breath. Sure. I'm not doing surf school for another hour. We'll walk back along the beach to the house. That way you won't be late. Mel pulled off her shoes, and they walked across the sand to the water's edge. Remember when we used to do this? Jump in the waves? We haven't done that since I was 12. Let's do it again, right now. Mel stopped and grabbed her daughter's hand, but Eden tugged it away, sending a mortified glance around her. What are you doing? What is wrong with you? I'm too old to be jumping in the waves with my mother. Right. Now, of course you are. She was doing this all wrong, and she had no idea what right looked like. Family has always been the most important thing to me. It's been the driving force behind most of the decisions I've made in my life. And I know that those decisions wouldn't be for everyone, but it was what I wanted. You once told me that I'd sold out. Eden looked uncomfortable. Do we have to talk about this? I want to talk about it. I want to share my thinking, and then I hope you'll share yours. She was simply going to tell her story and hope that Eden would listen. I can't remember when I fell in love with your dad, but it feels as if I've been in love with him my whole life. We went off to college, and it was a really happy time, and maybe for a while, I did wonder if it would be fun to travel and get a job on the East Coast, New York, or somewhere buzzy and exciting. Your Uncle Nate was in Europe, and I didn't see myself working in the surf cafe, except maybe during holidays when I was home from my glitzy life. I wanted more than that, or so I thought. And then I found out I was pregnant. So I ruined your fun? Having you was the most exciting thing that happened to me, and I didn't see it changing my life. Your dad and I decided New York could wait. And then Grandpa had a heart attack, and Uncle Nate came home. We all helped in the cafe so that Grandpa didn't have to, and that was fine. I used to bring you to the cafe, and you'd sit with Grandma. Yeah, I remember. Yes, or any number of my friends from town, Mary Lou, Rosa. Whenever I needed help, there was someone I could turn to. Life was easy here. Did I occasionally think about New York City and how it might have felt to stride down Fifth Avenue with my heels tapping, wear a smart suit, and maybe work in a fancy glass office with a view of the Empire State Building? Yes, I thought about it. I even interviewed for a job. Eden's face changed. You went to Manhattan? When? How old was I? You would have been 18 months old. I saw a job advertised, an entry-level position in a big creative agency. I didn't even want to apply, but Nate insisted. He knew that living in New York was my dream. He wanted me to have my dream. He said he'd handle the cafe. Your grandparents took care of you for a few nights. Nate covered the cafe, and Greg and I flew to New York. We stayed in a fancy hotel, we went to a show, and had a romantic dinner in one of those restaurants that have a view of the city. And the next morning, I wore my high heels, brand new, and a smart suit, also brand new, and I took a cab to the company offices on 7th Avenue, and I was interviewed in a glass office so high in the building,
I felt as if I was looking down on the world. I'd never felt anything like it, the excitement and adrenaline.
But you didn't get the job.
I'm sorry, Mom.
What makes you think I didn't get the job?
Eden frowned.
Because we never lived in New York. You never worked there.
That's right. We didn't. I didn't. But not because I didn't get the job. They offered me the job right there and then, along with more money than I'd ever seen. Although, of course, this was Manhattan, so between accommodation and childcare, the money would have been eaten up in a New York minute.
They offered you the job. Eden looked confused. So what happened?
I turned it down.
You, Mom?
That's right.
Was it an easy decision?
Yes and no. Like most decisions, there were arguments to support both sides. I always wanted to live in New York for a while, and it was everything I thought it would be, glitzy and exciting. She could still remember the breathless feeling of just being there.
What happened?
I was in the hotel with your dad, and then you called me with a little help from your grandmother, and you were laughing and having fun, and you'd learned to put two words together for the first time. You said, "Mommy gone." And I realized that wasn't what I wanted. I didn't want someone else to witness all your milestones. I didn't want to be gone. I could hear the ocean in the background, and I looked out of the window at the city and I thought, what am I doing here? And Greg and I arrived home, and there was live music in the cafe, the sun was setting over the ocean, and Rosa kissed Adam that night, which had been coming for a long time. And Nate was dancing with you, and I remember standing there thinking, I'm home. This is my place. This is where I want to be. And did it feel glitzy and glamorous? No. But it was other things. And those other things eclipsed what New York would have offered me. She still remembered the feeling, how sure she'd been. I know you think I sold out Eden. I can see how it might look that way. But that isn't what happened. Grandpa wanted us to take over the cafe, that's true. But Nate made it clear that I didn't have to be a part of that. I could have left any time. But I made a choice to stay and live my life here in Silver Point. I've never regretted that choice, even though I'm sure plenty of people questioned my decision at the time. And I suppose what I'm saying is that I made that choice. No one made it for me. If it had turned out to be a mistake, it would have been my mistake and up to me to fix it. But somehow, with you, I've forgotten all that. I guess when you're a parent, you want to spare your child pain, but pain is how we learn. She smiled at her daughter. Make your choice, Eden, whatever it is. Make mistakes, because that's what life is all about. Live your life the way you want to live it. And I'm here to cheer you on and support you, whatever you do. Oh, she gasped as Eden flung her arms around her, almost knocking her onto the sand.
I'm sorry.
Eden's face was buried in Mel's neck.
I've been a moody, horrible...
No. Mel hugged her back. No apologies and no blaming. That's behind us.
I love you, Mom.
I love you, Mom. Mel felt her eyes fill. Damn it. Now? Here? On the beach in public?
I love you, too. Always.
Eden sniffed and pulled away.
I must look like crap.
Don't say crap.
I thought I was allowed to make my own choices.
Not when it comes to language on a public beach with small children around. But we may have a new relationship, but I'm still your mother. Eden grinned.
Are you sure you meant all those things you just said?
Absolutely. Try me.
All right. There's something I want to do right now. I want to jump in the waves like we used to.
Mel started to laugh.
Now? Aren't you too old to jump in the waves with your mother? I don't know.
Eden grabbed her hand and tugged her into the water.
Let's find out.
They plunged together, gasping as the cold water splashed at their legs and soaked their shorts. And as Mel laughed with her daughter, she caught sight of the surf cafe in the distance, and she thought, I didn't settle. I made a choice. And it was a good choice. Chapter 23. Joanna.
Joanna pushed open the door of the beach bookstore. The sun shone. Her head ached slightly from lack of sleep, and she couldn't remember when she last felt this happy. Mary Lou was handing a book to a customer. "You come back and let me know what you think. I have my own opinion about the ending, but no spoilers. You have a great day now." Joanna smiled at her and headed straight for the children's section. Mary Lou waited for the door to close behind the customer, then wandered over to join her. "I'm waiting for the day someone comes in and demands a refund because they didn't enjoy the ending." "You're smiling. You look different. Has something happened?" Nate, she thought. Nate had happened. A wonderful evening had turned into a wonderful night. "I'm enjoying being back in Silver Point, that's all." "Mm-hmm." Mary Lou's expression suggested she didn't believe her. "Does this enjoyment have anything to do with the fact that Nate Monroe bought a bunch of daisies from Glenda's flower shop yesterday afternoon?" "You saw that?" "Carly saw it, and she told Letitia in the bakery, and Letitia told me when I picked up some of those delicious warm French pastries this morning. We all remembered you used to be partial to them." Joanna laughed. "This place never changes." "Thank the Lord, no, it doesn't. But I won't be the only one pleased to see the two of you together again." Mary Lou eyed her. "Some things are meant to be." "It was just two old friends spending an evening together, Mary Lou. I'm not looking for a relationship, and I doubt he is either." And that, she thought, was just one of the many reasons the evening had been so perfect. Neither of them had expected anything of the other. There was no pressure. They'd simply enjoyed each other's company in the moment, and this morning he'd returned to his place. Where was he now? Probably serving customers with a smile that might be just a little less wide this morning on account of the fact that he'd had less than 3 hours sleep. Something he'd pointed out when he'd pulled her into the shower with him that morning. Was he thinking about her? Mary Lou raised an eyebrow. "Seeing an old friend doesn't usually make me glow the way you're glowing. But sure, let's pretend that's what this is, if it makes you feel comfortable. We'll see how that works out. Now, what can I help you with this morning? You're looking for books on relationships? One just came in yesterday. First Love, Second Chance." "Seriously?" "No, I was kidding." Mary Lou raised her hands. "Sorry. You came in here for something, and probably not to give me the chance to tease you." Joanna smiled. It had been so long since anyone had teased her in a friendly fashion. So long since she'd felt this comfortable with the people around her. "I want to buy books for Ashley's baby." Mary Lou stared at her. "The baby she's carrying? Not that I know much about child development, but it'll be a while before it's reading. My earliest memory was of my dad reading to me. I was on his lap on the porch of Otter's Nest, and I remember the sound of his voice and the excitement as he turned the pages and the feeling that this was an adventure we were taking together." Mary Lou sniffed. "He was a good man, your dad. We all miss him. Now, let's find you some books. I want to make her a library. It's my gift to her." She was going to clear the bookshelves in the second guest bedroom and turn it into a nursery. Even if Ashley wanted to move to a place of her own, it would be somewhere that could be hers and the baby's when they came to visit. "She's lucky to have you in her corner." Joanna thought about Ashley's spirit and patience. "I'm the lucky one." "Maybe. She was out with Eden last night, the two of them laughing so hard into their ice cream sundaes that everyone in the place was smiling too. Do you know which books you want, or are you browsing?" Joanna pulled out her list. "I have ideas, but suggestions are always welcome." "With a list as long as that, you're the one who's welcome. If you want to spend your money here, I'm not going to stop you. Take all the time you need." Joanna caught the anxiety in her voice. "How are things, Mary Lou?" "And the store is busy enough." Mary Lou rearranged a few of the books that people had put back randomly. "The most frustrating thing
is that people come in here to browse, and then they go buy it online. I could do with hiring someone to help out here, so I could spend more time at home. My mother's arthritis is worse, and there are weeks when she can't walk across the room. But I only need someone part-time, and I can't find anyone who wants to do it. She paused as her phone rang. Oh, it's Mom. I need to get this. Joanna waved a hand. Go ahead. I'm fine here. Thanks. Mom? Mary Lou turned away and then stopped. You fell? No. Did you call 911? Well, of course you should. No, it isn't bothering anyone. Well, maybe they are busy, but you're as important as everyone else, more important in my opinion. Stay there. I'm on my way. What? Oh, it doesn't matter about the store. I'll close up. I'm coming with you to the hospital, and that's the end of it. She dropped the phone, cursed, fumbled for it. Sorry, Joanna. I'm going to have to close the store. No, I heard. Joanna rescued the phone and pressed it back into Mary Lou's hand. Give me the keys. I'll lock up for you. Just go. Call me later and let me know how she is. Send my best wishes to your mother. And if there's anything else I can do, let me know. You'd lock up? Oh, that's kind. My mother's already worrying about how much money we'll lose. Well, you know how she loves this place. I swear, it's like a second child to her. But the store is the least of our worries right now. Mary Lou glanced around the store, distracted. But you need your purse. Joanna grabbed it from behind the counter. An idea formed, so momentous that she almost dismissed it. But these days, she wasn't dismissing anything. And unless you particularly want me to close, why don't I keep this place open? I worked a few shifts in Cliff's cook store when I was getting experience of the business, enough that I can figure this out. And if people have questions, I can make a note of their details, and you can deal with it when you're back. Mary Lou shook her head. I can't ask you to do that. You're not asking. I'm offering. I'd really like to. But why? It's not like you need the money or a job. Mary Lou clamped her mouth shut. That was rude. I'm sorry. Don't be. I'm not doing it for the money, Mary Lou. I'm doing it for you, for your mom, and for myself, because I can't think of a better way to spend a few hours than with a store full of books. Are you sure? Positive. I haven't forgotten how kind your mother was to me when I was younger, or her generosity. This is my chance to do something in return. Hopefully she will worry less if you reassure her that the store is still open for business. Now go. Call me when you have news on her. Well, in that case, thank you. You're a lifesaver. Mary Lou pressed the keys into her hand and sped out of the door. Joanna stood for a moment. She wasn't a lifesaver, but it was good to be able to help in a small way. Moments later, the door flew open. It was Rosa from the boutique. Joanna, I just heard about Vivian. Thought Mary Lou might need help with the store. Now I can watch both, or close mine for the day, whatever works. Community, Joanna thought. Here, everything and everyone were interconnected. They knew each other. They cared. She hadn't even realized how much she'd missed it until now. I've got this, Rosa. But I'll let you know as soon as we have news of Vivian. Mary Lou will message me, I'm sure. Rosa grinned at her. I hear you wore the white dress last night. How did that turn out for you? Thinking of exactly how it had turned out made Joanna's cheeks heat. How did you? Ashley mentioned it. She and Eden were trying on half the clothes in the store yesterday. I'm going to track down a few maternity pieces for her for later on. Of course, right now, you wouldn't even know she was pregnant. Rosa winked at her. And look at you, spending an evening with Nate. It's like time rewound. In fact, it wasn't, and that was one of the things Joanna had enjoyed most about it. It hadn't felt like an extension of the old. It had felt new, fresh. It was just dinner. I cooked it. And he survived. I know that because I saw him on the deck of the surf cafe a few moments ago, smiling that smile of his, very much alive. I make it a point to try not to kill my dates. It's good to see both of you happy. Rosa folded her arms and narrowed her eyes. Look at you, Joanna Rafferty. You always were the bookworm, and now you're in charge of a bookstore. But this is your dream, right?
Joanna laughed.
It is, although not under these circumstances, obviously. She thought of Vivian and all the books she'd given Joanna over the years. I owe Vivian a lot. If there was a way to help, then she was going to help, and it wasn't as if they were likely to be busy. Turned out she was wrong about that. By the time Mary Lou reappeared at the end of the day, Joanna had served an endless stream of customers and hadn't had time to use the bathroom.
"You come back when you're ready for the sequel," she told a girl of 7 who had just bought the first in a series of ballet books. "I'll keep it right here for you."
"Will you put my name on it?"
"I'll do that right now." Joanna pulled the book off the shelf, tucked a note inside, and slid it behind the counter. "There, it's waiting for you." The girl's mother smiled.
"Thank you. This was fun."
Joanna waited for them to leave and then turned to Mary Lou. "How is Vivian?"
"Nothing broken, thank goodness. She's going to have bruises, and she needs to take it easy for a while. But it could have been a lot worse. She sent her love to you. Said she hoped you'd stop by and see her soon."
"Oh, I'd like that."
"Oh, Mary Lou, you look exhausted."
"Just worried.
I'm going to have to close this place for the next few days so that I can stay close and help her."
Mary Lou rubbed her hand over her back.
"Thanks for stepping in today."
"Don't close. I can cover this, although I've made a list of things I need help with so I don't lose you money." Joanna grabbed the notepad and quickly ran through her questions. Mary Lou hesitated.
"If you're doing this, then I'm paying you."
"I don't..."
Joanna was about to say she didn't want payment, but then she saw the stubborn set of Mary Lou's jaw. Independence, she thought. She knew all about the need for that.
"Sure. Pay me whatever you feel is fair."
"Oh, it'll be a meaningless amount to you."
"Money is never meaningless," Joanna said. "And this is my dream job."
Mary Lou laughed. "Well, in that case, you're hired. You start at 8 tomorrow. Unpack any new stock and shelve it. Clean the place. It's time to change the window display. We have a signing next week, so if you feel like flexing your artistic talents, you can work on that."
She told Nate about it later as they strolled along the sand from the surf cafe.
"I landed my dream job today, at 40. Can you believe that?"
She pulled off her shoes and carried them, loving the feel of the sand on her bare feet.
"I'm excited about going to work tomorrow, and I have never felt like that before."
"Are you sure you're not just going to sit there and read all the books?"
"That too. Perks of the job, right? I put together a few ideas for the window display. Do you think it would be interfering or forward of me to suggest doing a few events for children? I thought we could start with dressing up and reading." The ideas kept popping in her head, and she couldn't wait to discuss some of them with Mary Lou.
"I think Mary Lou and Vivian will be glad for anything that attracts business."
"I don't want to overstep." But she couldn't stop herself planning. "I was thinking that in the future, we could hold book club evenings at the Surf Cafe. That way, we'd be combining
books, food, and drink."
He smiled and pulled her closer.
"You like the idea?"
"Yes. I also like the fact that your plans for the future involve being here for a while."
She thought about Mel and Greg, about Mary Lou and Rosa, Ashley lying by the pool, Otter's Nest, Nate.
"I didn't come here planning to stay, but now I can't imagine leaving. I spoke to the lawyers this morning. I'm selling my shares in Cliff's company."
She'd made up her mind after their night together, when she'd realized that being with Nate hadn't been a trip back to the past, but a step into the future.